The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consa with Kelly Purcell. She is editor of Institutional Investing in Infrastructure, and she's got a new edition out, the April issue of the magazine. Kelly, how are things going?
Hi, Mike. Things are going great. As you mentioned, this April issue of I3 is a print issue. So, you know, we've been really busy in getting that together in the last few weeks, and I'm really excited to talk about some of the features running in it this time.
So I understand you have a couple stories, one about infrastructure debt and one about the future of airports. Let's start with infrastructure debt. Give us the sketch on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So infrastructure debt story is called Taking Flight. And that was written by Loretta Klodfelter, our editorial director here at IREI. And she did a really good job. This story essentially explores infrastructure debt as a growing investment opportunity. And this is something we've been hearing a lot about in our virtual roundtables, at our events, and just talking with people in the industry. The other story is called Runway to the Future, and that one was written by me. And that's about, like you said, the reimagining of airports and how they become more high tech and sustainable in terms of their carbon emissions and their fuel sources and operations. So one thing that both stories have in common is they actually received a lot of interest from industry participants. I think both stories, they each have about 7 sources that are quoted. So that might tell you something about where people's heads are at right now. But starting with infrastructure debt, we've been hearing a lot about this topic. Like I said, persistent curiosity in the segment of the market is leading to a lot of commitments into infrastructure debt. And it's largely due to that higher interest rate environment we are very familiar with at this point. Many predict the volume of infrastructure debt fundraising is going to increase. And Loretta illustrates this really beautifully by tying in IREI's recent infrastructure fundraising trends report. The numbers she included were very telling. Infrastructure debt funds raised $16.7 billion last year and represented nearly a quarter of total infrastructure fundraising in 2023. Also notable is that 3 of the top 10 infrastructure funds closed in 2023 were debt, and 2 of the 5 largest vehicles were debt funds. So just to illustrate that growing opportunity for infrastructure debt. So as a result, Mike, the size of that opportunity is definitely growing, as you can see. One example is traditional sources of infrastructure debt financing, like banks and governments, are pulling back due to regulatory pressures or a shortage of available capital. And that's creating an opportunity for non-bank lenders to become active in the space.
Yeah, wow. You know, debt investing is big everywhere. And I'm glad to see I suppose it's not surprising that it's available there or very popular in the infrastructure space as well. There's always that debt equity sort of equation, and debt seems to be picking up a bigger and bigger portion these days. So what is the driver here? Infrastructure debt investing is being driven by what?
Yeah, so there are a number of tailwinds supporting the infrastructure credit segment. Some of the ones that Loretta talks about in the story, elevated interest rates are certainly driving infrastructure debt, especially floating rate products. And infrastructure debt is also, it can also serve as an indirect hedge against inflation. In fact, experts say there are better credit opportunities now than there were several years ago. So that's really interesting to note. Another one is the need to replace aging infrastructure. You know, that's requiring a considerable amount of capital. Loretta also talks about digitalization trends and the shift toward decarbonization and electrification. Those are also playing a part in what's driving the segment. And this is just the beginning, Mike. One source in the feature I really like this quote, they say, we're just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of infrastructure credit. And I think that sums up the general sentiment of the story pretty well.
So there has been a lot of talk about where certain up-and-coming asset classes fit into portfolios. If an institutional investor wants to invest in an infrastructure debt fund, where will that allocation come from?
Yeah, so Loretta talks about this in the story. There's a pretty good section of this, but it's a mixed bag depending on who you talk to, essentially. Some of the answers run the gamut from private credit to fixed income to real assets in infrastructure. And it seems that there are several buckets into which infrastructure debt might fit. The consensus is that traditional asset managers are now seeing the value of having an infrastructure debt offering for their investors. And as the infrastructure asset class matures as a whole, infrastructure debt is becoming more of a mainstream asset class on its own.
There are people who talk about what we're seeing today as the golden age of debt financing. It's the golden age of private credit or private debt, and we're seeing a lot of that now. And again, as I was saying earlier, obviously in the infrastructure space, based on the research Loretta did for this story, maybe there's a golden age for airports up ahead. Your other story about the future of airports, and one of the things that people point to when they talk about how bad our infrastructure is in the United States, that we've got airports that look like third world airports, that we're not up to speed with so many other countries around the world. But that seems to be changing. Now, the nature of the story you wrote, I believe you took a more global perspective as to airports, but a lot of this stuff is also happening in the United States. What are we seeing in terms of airports and the innovations that are being made? What is being rolled out now?
So yeah, Mike, you're seeing this sort of reimagining of the airport and all the activities that go with it. In the past, airports were just kind of these utilitarian transport hubs, but we're seeing the next generation of airports are being built to be more like lifestyle centers. So that's really interesting. And airports around the world are doing this in different ways.
You had mentioned energy generation being one of the aspects here, also trying to lower emissions and airports. Obviously, they jet fuel hundreds or thousands of flights per day. There's a lot of operation going on there, a lot of carbon being produced and put into the atmosphere. What are they attempting to do? I don't know if you want to take these separately. They kind of go together, of course, if they're building some renewable generating stations that are specific to airports, to their particular airport. Is that the case? Are they actually building much like a data center does, where it's we have to be responsible for our own energy, so we're putting a solar farm on our property as well? Do airports look at it that way, or are they just finding renewable sources of energy that they can contract with?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I'll just break it down into some of the innovations, technologies we're seeing as well. I'll just start with that. There's a lot to unpack in this story. I covered everything from technology, like I said, to, like you mentioned, sustainable fuels and stuff like that. So first and foremost, like in the airports themselves, we're going to start seeing more scanners that don't require bags to be emptied at security checkpoints. AI is certainly becoming entrenched in almost every aspect of the passenger experience. So AI is managing queue systems, biometric identification tools that allow passengers to complete passport processing. Those are being deployed as well. And a lot of this was actually born out of the pandemic, which propelled the use of touchless technology, as we're all pretty familiar with at this point. And it's not just the technology at the terminal itself. More airports are starting to electrify their fleets of ground service equipment. And going back to what you kind of mentioned before, sustainable aviation fuel production is becoming a lot more commercialized and integrated into the fuel mix. Our listeners are probably, they probably heard about this, but last November, Virgin Atlantic's Flight 100 flew from London's Heathrow Airport to JFK in New York on 100% sustainable aviation fuel. And this is the first time that's ever happened anywhere. So all these futuristic kind of Jetson style changes, they're working toward that common goal of bringing down carbon emissions in the sector. And many people in the industry are well aware that the aviation sector is one of the hardest ones to decarbonize. But it's challenging because at the same time, the sector has a goal of achieving net zero carbon emissions from their operations by 2050. So there's a lot of factors that are going to be necessary to get to that goal. And Mike, I think it's important to point out that the airports themselves are not the largest direct emitters of carbon emissions, but they still have an important role to play in that net zero story. You see a lot of airports around the world approaching it in different ways. As you mentioned, I took a global approach, and touching on several airports that are doing really innovative things to kind of reach those goals on their own. And some, as an example, are being built to run only on their own wind and solar plants. Others actually are building desalination plants that convert local seawater to fresh water. And just overall, airports are becoming conscious of the emissions involved in their construction and maintenance as they start these renovations and these projects to modernize. So they're starting to use greener materials when they're building them out.
Yeah, well, the building material, I mean, concrete as an example is a huge emitter. That's a big one right there. You mentioned the sustainable aviation fuel or biofuels. And one of the other things that we've written about is even electric aircraft, not to go across the ocean, but to short flights. It could be a regional flight that is actually an electric jet. So some pretty amazing stuff. But you mentioned 2050 for decarbonizing or hitting their goals. How realistic is that? Is there a they're taking this collective action? They're hitting this from several different angles. Is there any sense for whether they're being overly ambitious or whether 2050 is a goal that's very reachable?
Yeah, so that was one of my main questions actually when approaching the story and talking to all these sources and stakeholders involved. I think in general, people do feel like it is attainable, but there's still a lot of work that has to be done. So maybe not, 100% there by 2050. I mean, it's already 2024. So it's passing, time is passing quickly, and there's still so much that has to be done. As I mentioned, this segment is one of the hardest ones to decarbonize, even though airports themselves are a relatively small part of that carbon story for transport as a whole. But we're definitely seeing more projects come to pass. In the US alone, the FAA just awarded $970 million to 114 airports, and that will go toward everything from, modernizations and more of the things I mentioned earlier, in terms of technology advancements, et cetera. So it's hard to say for sure if that 2050 goal will actually be attained within the timeframe we want it to, but experts seem to think that, governments will step up and impose caps on air traffic if we get off track. And we actually are seeing that kind of happen or start to happen, not necessarily successfully. I think, I wrote about it in the story. You can find more information on that. But one of the airports just went through that and it didn't work out well. But overall, we seem to think that, governments will just have more of a role in that and in getting us back on track. But the general consensus is that it's going to take a whole of industry approach to decarbonize air travel and get where we need to go. Yeah, you can read more about the details. There's a lot of information in the story. I urge people to go find it and the April issue of Institutional Investing in Infrastructure, and it's called Runway to the Future. So yeah, I hope our listeners take something away from it.
I love this story, and I've picked it up for the May edition of Real Assets Advisor magazine as well. So, if everybody out there, you can read it twice. Callie, as always, great catching up with you, and thank you for the report.
Yeah, great catching up with you, Mike, and I'll see you next month.